podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Fire for them, fire for them. If you're looking for that 35 bag umbrella and all damn thing there, keep it locked with the Tsunomics podcast.
Yo, what's good, people? You know, listen to another episode of Tsunomics podcast. I hope the sound hasn't been too bad. I didn't have my luggage, I didn't have all my recording stuff. But this will be the last one that's going to sound like this. We'll be back to the regular schedule. You know what I mean? Anyway, I hope you checked out episode 260. Virgil losing my luggage and train strikes. So I go into the fiasco that was the Wahala at Heathrow. Baggage Mountain, as the newspapers have called it, where on the 17th and 18th of June, the alleged failure of the Heathrow conveyor belt system that takes our luggages basically just collapsed and everything. And the lack of staff led to flights being cancelled, hundreds of people losing their luggages on their holidays, on return from the holidays, including myself. And an update, for those who care, which all of you do, I finally received my luggage on Saturday, 5 p.m. Miami time, when I actually arrived exactly 7 hours, 7 days, well, 7 p.m. Saturday the week before. So effectively for 7 days, I didn't have my luggage. I finally got my luggage at the airport a week after. So as my trip is drawing to a close, because as I'm recording this, I'm about to check out my hotel, chill by the pool, then go to the airport. I didn't have my luggage for the whole trip. Absolute waste of space. So yeah, that was an absolute disaster. So check my perspective on that and how many people have been impacted and what the airlines and Heathrow are saying, all that type of stuff. And of course, we speak on the train strikes. Not just the train strikes, I mean the RMT strikes, should I say, which can impact trains and all of the above. Now, another podcast episode dropped earlier in the week, and that was regarding exchange rates. Make this one exchange for me. Why your holidays are now more expensive, and this is something that I've personally felt. First of all, American prices are just higher. We are actually very, very lucky. Then again, Americans do earn significantly more than us. Their average wage is like $51,000 compared to ours, which is like $25,000. But their prices are high. And even yesterday, I was in a shopping mall, and I was going through shops, and I went into Saks Fifth, and I was looking at the prices, and I was like, hold on, even with the exchange rate in our favour, this is still significantly more expensive. A lot of stuff is significantly more expensive. My partner was telling me bare stuff that ladies buy are way more expensive here than they are in the UK. And I was like, even with a hefty exchange rate, this is still more pricey. And plus, when you go to the till, they slap on the tax on top. Nah, I'm good. So yeah, make sure you check the episode out. That helps you understand why exchange rates matter when you're importing stuff, buying stuff on Amazon, whether you're an exporter, you sell stuff to on the continent, going on holidays, and how it impacts inflation, all that good stuff. Anyway, this week's episode is an important one. And we are going to be talking about what's the Supreme Court, right? And this is the United States Supreme Court. And this is with regards to what they've done this week, which is effectively repealed Roe versus Wade, which is the rolling back of abortion protections in the United States of America, right? So in this episode, I want to focus more on the Supreme Court so people understand who they are. I've seen a lot of talks like, how can men decide what they do with their bodies? And we're going to get into all of that and how these people who aren't elected have such power. So I'm going to talk about the Supreme Court, the history, how it works, how people are appointed, and then I'm going to get into what happened this week, the appealing of Roe versus Wade, the theory behind that, the potential impact, how Americans feel about it, so on and so forth. Now, it's very interesting because May 2019, I did an episode with the great Bolasol and a brilliant young lady by the name of Stocko called The Abortion Debate. That's episode 107. So I'll put this in a link of this podcast so you can go check it out. And or you can just search Tsunomics episode 107, or just search Tsunomics abortion on Spotify and Apple. And that gives you like some background story to some of the laws that some of these states were trying to push. And this is even a good 3 years before this Supreme Court justice ruling. But yeah, we're going to get into it. And yeah, let's go.
Hi, it's MXM. And listen to the Dysonomics podcast because it's lit.
What's going on, people? You're listening to Dysonomics, of course. And we're going to be talking the Supreme Court justices from the United States of America with regards to this abortion ruling. They also had a controversial ruling regarding the right to bear arms, and this is with, I think, the state of New York, who wanted it something to do with publicly concealing, blah, blah, blah. But I'll get onto that in a separate pod, because that's a separate beast in itself. But let's start off with, who the are the Supreme Court, fam? Who are these niggas from the meme? What is the Supreme Court? The Supreme Court is the highest tribunal in the nation, and then that nation is the United States. And all is the highest tribunal in the nation of all cases and controversies aired under this constitution or the laws of the United States. So all things legal and constitution, the highest point it can go to is the Supreme Court, hence the term supreme. They are the final arbiter of the law. They function as a guardian and interpreter of the constitution. And this is very important. They are guardians and interpreters of the constitution. This does not mean they have a particular moral compass. Like, they're not guarded. Like, if the constitution says something that the whole world deems to be completely immoral, they're not going to change it if the constitution explicitly says that. And a very important word is interpreter. And we're going to get into the word interpretation later when you look at the difference between people who are more conservative compared to people who are more liberal. The ultimate responsibility of the Supreme Court is equal justice under the law. And this is written on the building of the Supreme Court at the entrance. The court consists of 9 justices, right? There is the Chief Justice of the United States and 8 associate justices. How you actually get these 9 justices into this building is not via an election. It's not via a game of rock, paper, scissors. You can't just buy your way into it, like the House of Lords. Cheeky shot there. You have to be nominated. And the power to nominate a Supreme Court justice is vested in the President of the United States. And appointments are made with the advice and the consent of the Senate. Now, with regards to the Senate, so let's say the president, so let's say who's the current president? President Biden wants to select LeBron James as the next Supreme Court justice, right? He can't just slap LeBron James in there and everybody has to have it. There has to be a vote in the Senate. And it's very simple. The majority wins, right? Whatever the majority vote wins. And that's why it's so important. That's why elections are so important. I've seen a lot of tweets online from Americans. I don't understand their frustration, especially people who are more liberal in this issue, and especially women, because obviously this is actually impacting women's bodies and their rights, and saying this is like these unelected officials. Well, yes, they're not deliberately elected, but the person who chooses them is elected, and there's another effective democratic election or vote in the Senate. But the issue is, and the reason why voting matters, is that whoever wins the election and has control over the Senate, who has a majority of the Senate, can get the justices through the door. I'm going to get into that a bit later. Yeah, so just to reiterate, the power to nominate justices vested in the president, so currently Joe Biden, and the appointments are made with the advice and the consent of the House of the Senate. The Supreme Court justices actually serve for life. Yeah, forever. Yeah, forever, ever, that type of vibe. Unless they resign, they die, or they are impeached and removed from office. So this is a pretty solid gig, and it's a very prestigious job. In terms of a Supreme Justice being impeached, only one Supreme Justice out of 115, because remember, it's a lifetime position, has ever been impeached. This was in 1804, and the House of Reps voted to impeach Justice Samuel Chase as a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and this was apparently a political type of thing, but of course, man wasn't there, so, and nor do I care really and truly. The longest serving Supreme Court justice was William O. Douglas, who served for 36 years and 209 days, so over 13,000 days he served as a Supreme Court justice from April 1939 to November 1975. Now, the reason some of you thinking why they should be allowed to be Supreme Court justices for life. Well, the reason behind this is that if you have a lifetime in the role, you should be kind of almost immune to political pressures from the executive, which is the presidency, and the legislative. There's three branches here of governance in America. There's the judiciary, which is the court system, and of course the Supreme Court is the top of the judiciary. There's the executive branch, that's the president and the men, and then there's the legislative branch, that's all like the House of Representatives, the senators, blah blah blah. So effectively, the Supreme Court should be like have the vaccine from the pressure of the Senate, the House of Representatives, the president and his cabinet. There's also a Chief Justice, right? And this person is the head of the United States judiciary system, right? And of course, he's also appointed by the president. He or she, I don't know why I said he, because there's currently he, it can be a she, of course. He or she is appointed by the president, and they don't have to be an associate justice first. Remember I said there's nine justices? There's the head honcho, the chief justice, and there's eight associates. You don't have to like be associate, put your boots on the ground, graft, and then eventually get a promotion. It doesn't work like that. Five of the 17 chief justices that have served the court have been associates before. So the majority of chief justices have not been an associate justice before. Chief justice, as I said, is the highest ranking officer in the US federal judiciary. And this is kind of the impact and the roles and the powers that the Chief Justice has, right? The Chief Justice has significant influence in the selection of the cases for review. So they kind of like have say on what cases they review. They preside over arguments that are held. They lead discussions amongst the judges of these cases that have been discussed. And also, when the court has an opinion, the Chief Justice, if the majority chooses, would choose, if there's a majority decision, he chooses who he or she chooses. I keep saying he because I know who the justice is. He or she chooses who writes the court's opinion. However, they don't have like a super vote. Not like you might have heard like the President of the United States can veto certain things. The Chief Justice can't veto things. It's a full-on democracy. There's nine members, so there's always going to be a majority, and his vote counts the same as the other eight justices. And also, chief justices also preside over the Senate trial of an impeached president. So, for example, when Trump was impeached, it was, of course, the chief justice that presided over that trial. Now, the current chief justice is a gentleman by the name of John G. Roberts Jr., and there's eight other members of the Supreme Court. There's Clarence Thomas, that's a black man, quite controversially for how he moves. There's Stephen G. Breyer, Samuel A. Alito Jr., Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Neil M. Gorsuch, Brett M. Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett. Now, if we look at analysis by political scientists Andrew Martin and Kevin Quinn, known as the Martin Quinn score, they have like an ideological score that they use, and you can see how conservative or how liberal certain people are in the Supreme Court. And if we're looking at this, like, it's no surprise that in the nine Supreme Court justices, six of them have actually been appointed by the Republicans, and the remaining three have been nominated by Democratic presidents. So naturally, the six nominated by the Republican president are on the conservative side of the political spectrum, ideological spectrum, compared to the three appointed by Democratic presidents are more the liberal side of things, right? And there's a score. Obviously, the higher the score one way shows how liberal you are and how conservative you are, right? So on the liberal side, the most liberal out of everybody by a score of 3.959. Actually, let me just scrap the scores, doesn't matter. Is Sonia Sotomayor. She was appointed by Barack Obama in 2009. Then the second most liberal is Stephen Breyer. He was appointed by Bill Clinton in 1994. So that's quite a while ago. And Elena Kagan was appointed by Barack Obama in August 2010. So two of the current Supreme Court justices are appointed by Obama and the other by Bill Clinton, in terms of liberal ones. Now, in terms of the more conservative ones, the least conservative is actually the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who goes by the name of John Roberts, who I mentioned earlier, and he was appointed by George W. Bush in 2005. The second most liberal is the controversial Brett Kavanaugh, who was appointed by Donald Trump in 2018, and he's the one who had multiple sexual assault allegations, but he still managed to get himself through the door. Amy Coney Barrett, only one of three women in the Supreme Court. She was also appointed by Donald Trump in 2020. Neil Gorsuch was appointed by Donald Trump in April 2017. Samuel Alito was appointed by George W. Bush in January 2006. And Clarence Thomas, he's the most conservative of the bunch, and he was appointed by George H.W. Bush. So George Bush is the one who bombed Iraq's dad, who also went to Iraq, in 1991. So he's currently the longest serving Supreme Court justice. Currently the longest serving Supreme Court justice. Let me see where he ranks in the list, though, of longest serving justices. So he must be pretty high up, because he's damn near been in the Supreme Court for almost as long as I've been alive. Yeah, he's been a Supreme Court justice since for 11,204 days. So for 30 years and 246 days, this brother has been in Supreme Court. And then also Stephen Breyer, he's actually been in there for a long time as well, to be fair, 27 years. But yeah, anyway, back to the matter. So that's the political breakdown. So you have six judges who are more on the conservative side compared to three judges more on the liberal side. Why does this matter? Because when there are certain issues like abortion, you can't be surprised when their interpretation, remember, as I said at the top of the podcast, what are the Supreme Court justices' jobs to do? They function as a guardian and our interpreter of the Constitution. So if you're a conservative, you're going to have a conservative lens when you're interpreting the Constitution. If you're a liberal, you're going to have a liberal lens when interpreting the Constitution. Like, and remember, they are legit reading the same words. The Constitution does not have exclusive versions for different people. So the fact that people can have different opinions shows how key and poignant that interpretation is, right? And this is why elections matter, which is what I tweeted the other day. Because Donald Trump winning that election, he was able to get in three Supreme Court justices. And that tips the balance, right? Because now there's 6-3 in terms of liberal to conservatives, right? 6-3. If that was a election won by the Democrats, if that's won by Hillary Clinton, is very, very, very unlikely we'll be in this predicament in terms of the abortion rights, because this wouldn't have happened. They would have won the vote. Now, let's get into the meat and bones of what's happening right now. Yeah? So Roe versus Wade overturned. Well, Roe v. Wade in 1973 was the Supreme Court ruling where they said that it was a constitutional right for women to be able to have abortions, and that should be upheld across the country, right? Well, unfortunately for the pro-choice movement, and in my opinion, the common sense argument, the Supreme Court issued a 6-3 ruling to overturn Roe versus Wade on June 24th, right? Which was only a couple of days ago. So, no surprise who voted in favor of overturning this. Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and John Roberts voted to overturned when Sonia Sotomayor, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan voted to dissent. So that this means that the constitutional right to abortion upheld since 1973, so almost 50 years, no longer existed. Now, remember I said the Chief Justice gets to say who writes an opinion. So Justice Samuel Alito wrote a 78-page opinion with 30-page appendix. So he came with receipts. He said that... of course, he's speaking for the majority of the ruling, said that the 1973 ruling and repeated subsequent higher court decisions reaffirmed Roe must be overruled. And he said they were, and I quote, egregiously wrong, and the arguments were exceptionally weak and damaging. And they amounted to an abuse of judicial authority. This, of course, likely means that abortion rights will be rolled back in almost half the states, with more restrictions on its way. Abortion will not be available in large parts of the country. This will make the courts, as well as abortion, a focal point in elections going forward. And funny enough, in early November 2022, there's going to be the midterm elections, right? And this is where all of the House representatives, so 435 congressional seats, are going to be up for grabs, as well as 34 of the 100 Senate seats. And I know for a fact that the Supreme Court, as well as this abortion law, is going to be a contentious issue when it comes to these elections. This gentleman, Alito's opinion, had various criticisms of Roe that have long existed in academia. And yeah, he was just basically saying, yeah, man, you man dragged it. Here, let me read a statement from the liberal Supreme Court justices that voted to dissent. Young women today will come of age with fewer rights than their mothers and grandmothers. Indeed, they said that the court's opinion means that from the very moment of fertilization, a woman has no right to speak. Of a state can force her to bring a pregnancy to term, even at the steepest personal and familial costs. It's hard to argue with that. John Roberts, who I said was the most liberal of the conservatives, he stated that he voted with the majority, but stated that he would have stopped at fully overturning Roe. So if they wanted to have a full on blanket across all states, that we're gonna run. Now, so what the Supreme Court have said is that they're not saying abortion should be completely, utterly illegal. They're saying that it should be up to the states to decide. They said that people, whatever state you're in, you clearly voted for your governor, you clearly voted for your senator. So it's up to you in your state to determine what you want to be done with abortion. It shouldn't be up for us. It shouldn't be a federal issue. It should be a statewide issue. So it could be more democratic. That is the argument of the Supreme Court. Which is very interesting, because on the flip side, people are saying, and this is so undemocratic, how could these men have a say on our bodies? Which, I understand that philosophical argument, because when you put it, obviously, I'm a woman, I've never been a woman, day in my life, so I can never intuit what it's like to be a woman. And for those who may not understand, I always like to put things in my shoes and relate it to whatever ethnic minority or social economic group that I belong to. Of course, I am a black man. So I couldn't imagine, I know for myself that if I saw, I don't know, an issue that was really, really, really key, and I was the overwhelming stakeholder in that issue as a black person for black people, and white people were the decision makers, I would feel the same way. So I fully understand it. However, there are three women in the Supreme Court. Two voted against, one voted in favor. But still, I fully understand that sentiment. But their argument is that we are leaving it for you people to decide via your elections. But then my argument is that I believe certain rights should be upheld federally by the people with the most power. So, and I think that this is one of those rights that should be upheld. Point blank, period. But again, the Supreme Court, their thing is about the Constitution. And I'm not going to pretend that I have the deepest understanding of the Constitution, but it's very, very difficult for things to be changed. When people talk about gun laws, which I'm going to talk about in a pod coming soon, it's very rare that that anything that is written in the Constitution is taken out. There's been over 13,000 attempts to change things written in the Constitution. I think only 8 have gone through. It's nigh on impossible. You're more likely to be struck by lightning twice than you are to see a change in the Constitution. But yeah, I think this is mad. Personally, as somebody who is pro-choice. Now, how do Americans feel about this? Well, I was looking at data all across the gaff, and one of the first things I saw was like 80% of Democrats believe that you should have an abortion on the majority of cases, compared to 33% of Republicans. But I'm looking at some research from Pew Research Center. Americans support abortion rights in some or all situations. Only 8% of adults say abortion should be against the law in all cases without exception. Only 8%. 19% say abortion should be legal in all cases without exception, according to Pew Research data. Americans support abortion rights in some or all situations, meaning they will disagree with overturning Roe v. Wade. Has been fairly consistent for a long time. 85% of American voters think abortion should be legal in some or all circumstances. So, in terms of legal in all circumstances, as of May 22, legal in certain 50% of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in certain circumstances. 35% of Americans believe that it should be legal in any circumstance, compared to 13% should be illegal in all circumstances. And that is as of May 2022. So that is definitely a larger number than what many would anticipate. So if we're looking at a CNN poll, which was conducted in May, immediately after the leak of the Supreme Court opinion, Americans said that 66% to 34% do not want Supreme Court to completely overturn the landmark 1973 decision. See, if you look at CNN's polling back in 1989, the share of public favor of complete overturn has never risen above 36%. Never. Just 17% of Americans in the CNN poll said they'll be happy to see Roe versus Wade overturned. 12% saying they'll be satisfied, and 21% say they'll be dissatisfied. 36% they'll be angry, and 14% said they didn't really care. According to the CNN poll, 58% of all adults said that if Roe was overturned, they'll want their state to set abortion laws that were more permissive than restrictive. About 51% said they would like to see the state become a safe haven for women who wanted abortions but couldn't get them where they lived. But most people aren't aware of how their state moves when it comes to this. So we now know what Americans think with regards to abortion. A lot more are pro-choice than pro-life, right? We know who the Supreme Court justices are. We know their political, and we know their ideological views. We know who appointed them. We know how long they've been there for. We know how the Supreme Court works. And we know what happened with regards to Roe versus Wade. What will be the impact of this? One of the things is, it's going to be a massive headache in terms of legal effort, in terms of legality. How do you apply the specific language of the final ruling to individual state laws? That's going to be the question. Some states, such as Texas and Oklahoma, have multiple abortion restrictions on the books already, raising potential questions about which ones will be valid. These laws each include different provisions and carry different penalties, adding to the potential confusion and prompting additional litigation in state and federal courts. It's going to get messy. And also another issue is that abortion bans in restrictive states aren't just going to be, okay, cool, in this state, you can't have an abortion under these circumstances. They are very likely to bleed over to states that protect abortion rights. Some lawmakers are actually trying to prohibit people in other states providing abortion to residents of their state. So let's say in Texas, they're like, yeah, you can't get an abortion, but they also don't want people to be able to go to California and get one, which I think is totally, totally draconian and just wicked. Pattern up your state. If people want to move to different states, no, you can't. I don't think it's good to do that. For example, an omnibus abortion law passed by a Republican supermajority in Kentucky early this year includes a host of new requirements for dispensing medication abortion pills and a provision for extraditing people from other states who illegally provide abortion pills to Kentuckians. But it's unclear how enforceable this is going to be. Crazy. Meanwhile, some states are actually trying to expand their access to abortion in preparation for more patients traveling from more restrictive states for these procedures. Connecticut lawmakers, for example, passed legislation this year designed to protect abortion providers from out-of-state lawsuits, which is very, very good. So in terms of currently, where are the states and where do they stand in with regards to abortion? Well, 44% of the states, so 22 states, either have abortion laws already, or anti-abortion laws already, or laws that are coming into effect. So the ones that have abortion bans or severely limitations or legislation that severely limits abortion: Texas, surprise; Oklahoma, surprise; Alabama, surprise; West Virginia, surprise; Ohio, Arkansas, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, and Louisiana have abortion bans or severely limit abortion. 11 other states have laws not yet in effect to do the same. So that's North Dakota, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, Tennessee, and Mississippi have laws on the books, but they haven't been enacted yet. South Carolina, Georgia, and Iowa want to ban from 6 weeks, but they're not yet in effect. And the Michigan governor asked for the pre-Roe ban to be shut down. And Arizona recently enacted a 15-week ban and may not enforce its pre-Roe ban. So, yeah, it's just rough. Like, it's just crazy. So, yeah, man, like, that's where we stand now. My personal opinion on everything. I'm pro-choice. I definitely believe in the right for women to choose what they do with their bodies. I don't believe that just because you agree to have sex, whether you protect or unprotected, it doesn't mean you consent to having a child. That is a potential consequence, but you didn't consent to that consequence. You consented to the act. That's how I believe. And I believe, especially with the way technology and healthcare is now, I believe women have the right to determine what they want to do with their body. If they want to have abortions or not, it should be their right. I disagree with the Supreme Court justice ruling. However, I do understand the sentiment of leaving it to the states, because that can be seen as technically democratic. But having said that, I don't believe things that with regards to humans' bodies should be left for states to decide. I think it should be decided federally across the board that, nope, we have to protect these rights. And that's my personal opinion on that. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. And I would like to do another pod with more detail, going into the abortion laws with more detail. But obviously, I want to do that with a woman on the podcast, not just myself in my Miami hotel room. But yeah, until midweek, people, peace and blessings. Let me know what you think of the pod. Make sure you share it with your friends. Make sure you are giving us 5 stars on Spotify as well as Apple Podcast. And yeah, let me know your opinions. Hashtag Dysnomics. And until midweek, peace and blessings.
Social Podcast Network.